And when we come back with Linda Moulton Howe, we're going to talk about a gigantic black triangle object spotted in Baghdad. That's an incredible story. Get ready for that. Welcome back to Coast, Linda Moulton Howe with us. Linda, this is an incredible story. We've heard of the black triangles all around the United States, but Baghdad? Go ahead.
Yeah, and it's so big. We know that something maybe a mile and an eighth or 2 miles was seen over Phoenix back on March 13th, 1997, and this one is at least maybe 1,200 feet long. Now, if we are going back to June 13th, 2006. U.S. Army Sergeant First Class David Mark Koch from Kansas was Alpha Company platoon leader in the 2nd Combined Arms Battalion, 137th Infantry Regiment, working at the Radawania Palace south of Baghdad. And that was that big grand palace that belonged to Saddam Hussein until it was taken over by the coalition forces during the March to April 2003 invasion of Iraq that was ordered by U.S. President George W. Bush. Early Tuesday morning, June 13th, Mark was surprised when he learned that he and his platoon were going to nearby Baghdad Airport to do a security check because the President of the United States was making a surprise visit that no one was to know about until he landed. The New York Times would report, quote, "Only a handful of Mr. Bush's closest aides knew about the six-hour visit before he departed from Washington on Monday night, June 12th, close quote. Sergeant Koch's next big shock wasn't political, and it wasn't on the ground. It came in the air during their later night mission when they drove to the village of Maqasib, not far from the Baghdad airport, to enforce curfew. Here now from Baldwin City, Kansas, is David Mark Koch.
On Tuesday, June the 13th, we had a security mission in Maqasib to check out the area and make sure there was no sign of anti-aircraft emplacements or anti-aircraft personnel up on top of the buildings with missiles and stuff, because the President of the United States was coming in on Air Force One and they were landing in Baghdad International Airport. Maqasib is right along the flight path to the entrance to the runway. And we just got briefed that morning, like an emergency session, and we're like, oh, wow, the president's coming to town. So and we dropped off snipers and all sorts of stuff, and we were on standby. He came in the day. We actually saw Air Force One fly in. We saw Air Force One come in off a high spiral. They came at a very high altitude, and you can see the plane make multiple descent passes in a tight circle and before it went into the Baghdad International Airport. And once we knew the president was on the ground, and we went back home to Radwania, once he was on the ground, we got to pull back and do maintenance because we had night patrols that night. So I got about 2 or 3 hours of sleep, and then we were out on night missions. And that's when we saw the big black triangle in the sky. That was that night in Maqasib. We had lookouts on the rooftops, and we had the JLINs from the Radwania Palace complex watching the roads. We also had close air support. I think there was a lot of helicopters in the sky that day, too. As far as our mission went, when we got back to the rear, our original schedule was night curfew patrols in Maqasib, because at one point in time, before we ever got there, and back when Saddam Hussein was in power, the Sunni areas were prosperous. I guess Saddam Hussein with background was Sunni. Maqasib was a Sunni town, but it was surrounded by a Shia-dominant city. So there's always some form of conflict in this little town. We were basically going in there on routine patrol to make sure the lights were off, the people were off the streets.
Okay, so you are how far in terms of distance south of Maqasib when 25 of you see this extraordinary sight in the sky?
But when you first go into the town of Maqasib, you go through a small little farming area. And I want to give you the story from the perspective of the guy in the lead vehicle what was radioed back to me, and then what happened from there. From his perspective, now this is what he told us. He said that when we first started to pull in to Makassib that night, he was a gunner on top of the vehicle in the lead of our patrol. He told us that he saw the black triangle come over us very closely. He said it flew over the city, and it banked off to the right and disappeared. He was like, what the heck was that? And he said as we got closer to the city of Makassib, it came back around and settled right over the top of us and stopped. That is what he told us. I did not notice that. So we're back there. I'm the number four vehicle, and I have the interpreter with us and my gunner and the driver. I got the alert that we have stopped the vehicle, emergency stop, and we have a routine that we do once we come to a security halt. That is, we stop the vehicles dead. The gunners up on top take their weapons off safe. We, in the vehicle, scan the outside of the vehicle first with a white light, and then we get out of the vehicle, then we pull a 360 security halt around the patrol itself, the five vehicles. We went through that motion. I'm looking around on the ground. I look at my gunner, and I said, hey, what's up? And he took his finger, and he pointed straight up. And I looked up, and I'm not sure what I'm looking at. I think there's these lights in the sky, and I'm thinking to myself with nuts and bolts common sense, when did the Corps of Engineers have time to run out here and put these up? Because that morning, you know, watching out for the president, and I'm looking at these. It looked like a continuation of the runway lights. And I'm going, well, how the hell did they put those up? And then it dawns on me that you can't see the stars between the lights. And then it kind of dawns on me there's no poles. And I was like, well, what in the heck is this? And so I just went and grabbed my night vision goggles. And then I got the big realization of what I was looking at. This big, huge, black triangle in the sky. It's got lights on this leading edge, about four or five on each side. And it's sitting right above us. It's not making a noise. It's not moving. You can hear the goats. You can hear our vehicles. And it's just sitting there looking at us. And we're looking at it. I got on my radio, I said, LT, you seeing this? And he's like, yeah, what do you make of it? I said, I have no idea. I have no idea whatsoever. And I was almost laughing because I was like, this can't be real. I think it was funny because I remember my gunner saying, you want me to take a shot at it? And he had a 50 caliber machine gun on top. And I looked at him, I said, hey, dude, no. I said, you're just going to piss it off.
Wow.
And my mind was like reeling, you know, well, how's this thing fly? And where's the jets? Where's the propellers? Where's the sound?
And the size that you estimated?
I estimated 4 football field, about 400 yards.
Each side of the triangle, 1,200 feet.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This is like an aircraft carrier suspended in the sky.
Well, if it's 1,200 feet on a side, it is still outside of terrestrial aircraft. And for something to be that large and for the front gunner to have seen it peel off to the right and come around and then be stock still in the air above you and making no sound, how is that possible?
I don't know. I have no idea. A lot of people ask me, well, did you experience missing time? Did your vehicles conk out? Did your radios not work? I said, no, everything was working great. I had my headphones on the entire time. I got no static. We had clear communication with the other squad leaders. My night vision goggles worked great. I was using ANTAS PVS-7s, which were pretty high speed at the time. I think they got something like a PVS-14 nowadays, but at the time, they were the top-of-the-line night vision goggles. We had perfect clarity, and I saw it in vivid detail. It was just a black triangle. Some of the other soldiers said that they could see the reflection of the city lights reflected on the skin of it. I didn't remember seeing that. One of the other NCOs said that he thought that the lights bordering the edge of this thing were, one guy was an old cowboy, and he said it reminded me of a gas lamp in a barn. He said it's kind of like a white-orange color.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I did notice, and this is really important, I think, is that when I looked at the lights that were on this craft, the lights didn't produce the halo effect that you usually get when you look at night vision goggles. Now, if you take night vision goggles, even the newest generation of night vision goggles, when you look at a light source at night, it will give you like a corona around the light source, sort of like looking at something through a drop of water on a glass pane.
Right.
It distorts the light a little bit. There was never any distortion coming from those lights, and that was really funky for me, because even the stars around this aircraft, or whatever it was, the stars have coronas around them when you look at them. These lights had no corona, like it was a different kind of element of light. It was like a solid, opaque, white light, but it had no corona around it.
When you were looking through your night vision goggles at these lights and there was no corona around them, were you looking at perfect circles?
Yeah.
Some people have illustrated what they saw in cameras, and some people have gotten photographs of what looked like rectangular lights on some of these huge triangles.
Well, see, that's what's really weird, too, because some of the guys said the same thing. Some of the guys said, no, they were square. I'm like, no, they were round. I saw round. So me and the lieutenant said, hey, look, obviously there's something above us. Let's get to the orange groves to the west of Mikasa, where our checkpoint was at. And I said, when we get back there, if it's still in the air, we'll call it in. So everybody jumped on board again. We revved up the vehicles, and we were screaming through Mikasa. We just wanted to get to the other side of town in order to look at this thing again from a different angle. By the time we got to this side where the orange grove was and we bailed out, we were looking back and the gunners were trying to keep track of it. I couldn't find it again. I think somebody said it jetted off toward Baghdad. I was like, I have no idea. I can't see it in the sky. I just said, hey, look, we saw something we can't explain. Everybody's in one piece. If you don't want to be the laughingstock of a battalion, I think we should keep this quiet until we're back in the States. And we can drop the bomb then. I said, but right now, if you want to be up for the next 5 to 6 hours filling out reports and being interrogated by, we call them spooks, the CIA, let's keep our mouths shut, keep from being the laughingstock, and get a good night's sleep. I'm exhausted. I remember saying that specifically. I'm tired. I don't want to do paperwork. We all agreed, and everybody's like, yeah. And they're like, well, what was it? I was like, I have no clue. I have no concept of what we just saw. Who was a UFO? Yeah, it was probably a UFO. That's my first guess.
Now, George, this is so important for several reasons. That one, we have that precedent in Phoenix in March 13th, 1997, of several people seeing something that was nearly 2 miles long. Here we have somebody who had a position of responsibility in the United States Army near Baghdad, who with 24 other men all watched this thing, and that it was stock still in the air for at least 5 minutes. Now, the very fact that they decided, he decided, that it was not going to serve them well to tell the truth to superiors or to anybody else is sort of one of the metaphors for what we're dealing with on a planet in which policies of denies and policies of lies are creating a kind of concocted false reality. And that this happened, March 13th, 1997 happened, and now going back to the year 1954, April. I'm holding in my hand one of the documents that have been leaked and that Bob Wood and others and I have dealt with now for going back really to the early 1990s. And we think this is truly one of the most important leaks in documents. It is the Restricted Psalm 101 Majestic 12 Group Special Operations Manual entitled Extraterrestrial Entities and Technology Recovery and Disposal, Top Secret Magic Eyes Only, with the War Office stamp at the bottom, Majestic 12 Group, and the date, April 1954. And when you get into this training manual, you get to a page that has illustrations of different types of craft, and below them, they are listed by the shape. And one of them says airfoil or triangle shape bottom view, and it is a triangle. And these drawings in the Psalm 101 training manual, there's a note. It says these illustrations in this diagram are gathered from documented sightings in Air Force and Central Intelligence, which existed then. It came into being under Truman on September 18, 1947, the CIA, and this is 1954. So Air Force and Central Intelligence sightings, and from examination of wreckage collected from various sources in the years 1947 to 1953 inclusive. And what does this training manual say about the airfoil or the triangular shape? Quote, this craft is believed to be new technology due to the rarity and recency of the observations. Radar indicates an isosceles triangle profile, the longest side being nearly 300 feet in length. Little is known about the performance of these craft due to the rarity of good sightings, but they are believed capable of high speeds and abrupt maneuvers similar to or exceeding the performance attributed to types A and C, which are described as elliptical or disc-shaped and ovoid or circular shape, with many details about these craft and another whole page about the description of extraterrestrial biological entities that have been retrieved both dead and alive from a whole variety of retrievals by our government before and after July 1947 Roswell. So that means if all of this part is true in a document, a leaked document that Bob Wood and I and others think is legitimate and is one of the most important leaks, it means that our government, at least by 1954, had been exposed to a 300-foot-long triangular craft that could do extraordinary performances, and that we are now, in 2014, talking about military observations of lights and craft. The one in Rendlesham was small. It was like black glass, but it was triangular shape, the one that allegedly sat down on the floor there. And that we are hearing from military people firsthand eyewitness accounts of extraordinary vehicles in the sky that when you boil it all down, we haven't been hearing these stories because the military now is repressive. The government's policies of denial are repressive. And so many things are happening and nobody is reporting them because no one wants to get in trouble. And we need this to end. We need repercussions, retaliations to end. We need to have honest dialogue with people who are representing us in this government.
And we continue to need people like you, Linda, to just investigate these incredible stories. And we've got more to come when we come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with Linda Moulton Howe. Next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Linda Moulton Howe, conversations with Linda. But when we come back, we shall talk about the personal experiences of retired U.S. Air Force Captain Robert Salas and what he saw in Montana. That's next. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Our final segment now with Linda Moulton Howe before we go to phone calls next hour with her includes a very incredible story that happened over Malmstrom Air Force Base in Montana. Linda, let's talk about this one.
But before that, I'm going to go to 7 years before the June 13th, 2006 huge black triangle over Maqasib, Iraq. U.S. Army Sergeant First Class Mark David Koch encountered something else so strange that he has nightmares about it. In October 1999, Mark was stationed at the Joint Multinational Readiness Center in Hohenfels, Germany, 140 miles southeast of Nuremberg. He was in the same Army unit that he had been in Iraq Alpha Company, 2nd Combined Arms Battalion, 137th Infantry Regiment. In Germany, their mission was to teach how to combat terrorists and guerrilla fighters. The teaching method was to pit units against each other. Mark's Alpha Company was to take on the 173rd Airborne Brigade from Italy. He told me, quote, "Our entire mission was just to make their lives hell and give them really good training," close quote. At the time, Mark Koch was also studying Qigong meditation. Instead of eating dinner at night, Mark liked to climb a hill to do Qigong. One evening in October 1999, Mark opened his eyes from a deep, peaceful meditation to find a darker twilight than he expected. Time had passed longer than he thought. Here again from Baldwin City, Kansas, we will begin with David Mark Koch, and then we will hear from Robert Salas.
I didn't have any weapons or anything with me. I was just in my PT gray uniform with some running shoes. I had no knife, I had no gun or anything with me. And as I came out of that meditation, I had a kind of a spooked feeling. And I thought, well, I bet some of my guys followed me out here wondering what old Sergeant was doing. And, you know, they're laying an ambush to surprise me. As I started walking down this hill, I could hear footsteps, like trying to step down when I stepped down. And I thought, oh, cool, this is going to be fun. I couldn't see anybody, but I could hear them. So I would do three fast steps, and it would do three fast steps. And then I did a little bit of a sprint down the hill, and I stopped suddenly, and I could hear it stop suddenly. I could hear gravel roll. And I'm like, who in the hell's got this kind of skill? Who's going to this trouble to spook me? And so I started sprinting down this hill, and I got onto the gravel road where the light was better, and I just stopped waiting for this guy to come tumbling down the hill after me. Well, it wasn't a guy. It was this, I don't know, three scrawny-looking thing, and it ran across the road behind a tree. And my first impression was, that's a damn big walking stick. Or that's a big mantis. Or that's a big funny-legged goat-rabbit combination. I mean, I didn't know what it was. It doesn't look like anything I've ever seen.
And you are how tall?
I'm 5'10".
So this was about half your size?
Yeah, I'd say about halfway up my thigh, I'd probably say. It's probably about 3 feet tall.
Okay, and what color did you see?
I don't know. That's the thing that really gets me the most. Was that hair I saw, was it a camouflage pattern that I saw? Was it slick skin that I saw? I don't know. But beyond the creature, what really got me the most was what happened to me. And Linda, I don't know how to describe it. When I knew I was in trouble, something happened about the C7 vertebrae in my back, and I just wasn't scared anymore.
What was it you felt?
It felt like I got enshrouded in some sort of segmented energy.
Segmented energy.
It felt like it kind of came out in place.
Oh, as if something were now protecting you in armor.
Thank you. When I draw it, that's how I think of it. All the fear I had at that point was just gone.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost like I was ready to go chase this thing.
To go to war with it.
Yeah, it was like, I think I even screamed at it and cussed at it. And it was like, come on, whatever you are, let's go. It basically did a 180 and I could hear it running off. I could see the dust kicked up on the road. It had like a goat leg. I mean, when it ran, it was like it put its chest forward and its legs were dog-legged. Then a thin upper torso with arms that kind of folded back in kind of like a praying mantis form, but the head jutted forward when it ran. So it looked really kind of funky, and it was like really skittered. I mean, it's like skittering.
And that is insect-like.
Yeah, it was very insect-like. It wasn't a graceful stride like a gazelle, or it wasn't like a hopping motion like a rabbit.
Have you had telepathic communication?
Well, the thing that really freaked me out was that as it ran behind that tree, and I was thinking about grabbing a handful of rocks, in my head I heard a voice say, like my voice talking to me, "If you turn and run, it will jump on your back and sink something into your neck and you'll never be found again."
Wow.
And that's when I got that watery feeling, like, you're screwed. And that's when the C7 kicked in. It branched out from C7 vertebrae, which in the Taoist region of the meditations and Qigong and stuff, the nerves from C7 branch out to the arms. So I figured that's where you felt the flow first, and then the encapsulation of the head, and then to your thigh, and down the back of your calf to the foot. So it started, C7 came around the arms, over the top of the head, down the legs. And once it shot in, it was like you just had no fear. And you're like, come on, little fellows, let's see this thing you can do. And it ran. Maybe I have a guardian angel that knows when to kick butt.
Like his 2006 decision in Makassib, Iraq, to remain silent about the gigantic black aerial triangle, Sergeant First Class David Mark Koch also did not report to his military superiors the 1999 encounter that he had with the alien-looking creature in the German Alps. Another military friend of Mark Koch's is Robert Salas, a retired U.S. Air Force captain who was assigned underground Minuteman nuclear missile duty in the 1960s. Bob and other U.S. Air Force personnel monitoring American nuclear missiles had their own encounters with unidentified aerial phenomena that could shut down 10 nuclear missiles every second. Bob experienced that himself and afterward was ordered not to talk about the UFO interference with U.S. nuclear missiles. But by 2005, after his non-disclosure time period had expired, Bob Salas wrote his first book, Faded Giants, about the repeated 1960s dramatic UFO intrusions of the Minuteman missiles at Malmstrom Air Force Base in Montana. After Faded Giants was released, Bob heard about other military experiences with UFOs that demonstrated complete control over the nuclear missiles and even manipulation of human minds and bodies assigned to guard the nuclear missiles. Bob Salas' new 2014 book, Unidentified: The UFO Phenomenon, explores how world governments have conspired to conceal humanity's biggest secret, a fact that has continued to anger Bob since he was ordered in 1967 by U.S. Air Force superiors to not talk or ask questions about the UFOs shutting down nuclear missiles at Malmstrom Air Force Base.
I was upset because something had happened that disabled our missiles, and you were not given any explanation. This was very strange because we had above top secret clearances, and we were briefed before we went out on alert every time we went out on any technical problems, and not a word of this ever again. I was there for another 2 years and nothing. So this was shocking. It bothered me all the time I was in the Air Force and out until 1994 when I was finally able to talk about it.
To never talk about something that is 30 feet in diameter or 100 feet in diameter and it's glowing and it's silent and it's right over a Minuteman missile and has the ability to shut down the missiles that are underground one by one as if it has complete and total control that makes you silent for a period of time on what seems like an impossible order.
Well, in my case, I had to sign a document that had penalties associated with it if I spoke about this. Lots of jail time and monetary penalties, plus ridicule issue, and there's plenty of pressures.
So something could be happening now as dramatic as what happened to you back in the 60s, and none of us would ever know until there is another whistleblower.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
And that comes to the heart of your subtitle of your new book, How World Governments Have Conspired to Conceal Humanity's Biggest Secret. What is the mechanism that enforces a secrecy that is a policy of denial about something so fundamental that we're not alone in this universe, never have been, and other intelligences interact with this planet, including nuclear missiles?
Right. A lot of evidence points to the fact that there is a secret group that is controlling this information. And I think this secret group is staffed by people probably in intelligence agencies. I doubt very much that the heads of states, such as our president, are in the know about the details of this secret. I think it's people within intelligence groups that are sharing information throughout the world.
military people in other countries, such as Peru, have told me that they were involved in meetings with U.S. military people where they were asking for data on UFO cases from their countries. So I know this sharing of information goes on secretively, and there's plenty of evidence. For example, if you believe the Roswell crash, we've already retrieved craft and possibly entities, then this information has to be held somewhere, and it has to be analyzed by this international UFO cabal. It exists. One way they're doing this is by keeping it from the heads of state. This group have compartmentalized areas. A few people know some of the secrets, but I think there is a core group that is controlling the entire operation. Now, we were able to keep the atomic bomb secret pretty well during World War II in secrecy and compartmentalization. So that's why I point to the intelligence agencies. They know how to do this. They've been doing this for a long time. I'm convinced that there must be a group of people handling this information. The other way of keeping it secret, the subject is one of either ridicule or not taken seriously by managing the media.
Where do you think all of this is headed?
At this point in time, we have 9 nuclear countries that are nuclear capable. Very recently, we've had shots fired between Pakistan and India, and they're both nuclear powers. We are still very much at risk of nuclear war. I think they're watching that. They would like to see us eliminate our nuclear weapons, that we completely destroy the planet. We don't know how they think or what they think or what their ultimate objectives are.
But there's no question in your mind that other intelligences are interacting with the planet now and have been for thousands of years.
Absolutely no question about it in my mind. And I think they're hoping that we will eliminate our nuclear weapons so we can survive.
In his new book, Bob...
Great interview.
Sorry, George?
It's a great interview, Linda.
Yes, it's very important. And in his new book, Bob writes, quote, "Holding secrets is power. Power corrupts. If we allow corruption to take hold, we allow a few to control us and our lives without our consent, and we allow a few to decide how we will interact or not interact with extraterrestrial life," close quote. And I would like to share right now, they're very wise, I think, and intelligent words from 2 great American presidents, and they apply so much right now to this dangerous crossroads that the United States is in, where we seem to be teetering toward some sort of a totalitarian state. First, see if you can guess who said this, George.
Okay.
Quote, "I know no safe depository of the ultimate powers of the society but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion," close quote.
Thomas Jefferson.
It is.
Yeah.
And it is in a letter to William Charles Jarvis, September 28, 1820, and Thomas Jefferson was the 3rd president of the United States and the principal author of the Declaration of Independence.
You know how I knew that?
Looking at my Earth files?
No, there aren't that many great presidents.
That's true. Well, the next one is also a great president, and this is a very important statement from him. "I am a firm believer in the people. If given the truth, they can be depended upon to meet any national crisis. The great point is to bring them the real facts," close quote. Abraham Lincoln, 16th President of the United States, assassinated in 1865.
So true.
These are the minds, these are the intelligences in which this country was founded of and by and for the people. And in 2014, that kind of intelligence, that kind of sense of the nation that we were to be, and that it seemed like we were trying to be, and now we are sliding down the slippery slope that seems fueled by a policy of denial and lies and suppression about what? That none of us are to know that extraterrestrial biological entities have been interacting with this planet for millennia, that our government thinks that it can somehow go by a century, another century on a planet, continuing lies that a whole population, a whole human family is denied some fundamental knowledge that we are not alone, that other intelligences have been interacting with, terraforming this planet, including genetic manipulation, and that that sentence, extraterrestrial biological entities manipulated DNA and already evolving primates to create Homo sapiens, is not knowledge that we should be running from, backing away from. It is knowledge that we should be trying to understand so we can be strong in our own feet, in our own minds, no matter what intelligences there are, and that part of this whole huge, strange crossroads transition, to me, it feels like we are, in a very odd way, going through tremendous turmoil that on the other side, if we can just survive it, would be a liberation of the entire human mind in the face of standing up and acknowledging extraterrestrial biological entities. And remember last month when that rancher, when I was interviewing him about all the mutilations on his Angus in Hagelin, Nebraska, and he said, spontaneously, he said, well, why can't I have a trade route with them? If they're extraterrestrials and they got a problem and they need some of my Angus, well, then they can give me something that I can use here on this planet. That's the attitude that we all could be sharing if the governments would stop these policies of denials and lies, and we could move into the 21st century with some sort of an interaction with non-humans. And when Lockheed came out with that exciting headline earlier this week that they may have some sort of fusion in some sort of a special bottle that could have some propulsion system for aircraft, I thought immediately, I bet money it's based on back-engineered extraterrestrial technology.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. As I was talking to a friend of mine from Boeing tonight, and I said, come on, what do you know about reverse engineering? He just says, don't ask. We'll be back with Conversations with Linda next on Coast to Coast AM.